mayor's here. And let's have the pledge of allegiance this time. So, Doug, would you lead us in the pledge of allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Doug. Item number four is added agenda items, and I would like to point out at this time we will add a second individual to the nominations and election to the budget committee, which is item
ten.
Well, the one we're talking about.
Ten.
Item number five is the consent agenda. I would like to have the financial summary extracted and have it just go over it with the city staff. And with that extraction, is there a approval of the consent agenda? Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
And before we get to that, I would have to say that our counselor, Stu Martinez, is not present this evening and is with an approved absence. And the shall we do that later, or do you want to?
Well, no. You usually, if you pull something, you do it right now.
Okay. So which question? Just, I'd like to go down the see us go down the percentages.
Okay. And what? I mean, there's a whole bunch of. So is there?
Well, can we? No. I just. I would like to see us do that on a regular basis.
Okay, we're going to be going through a whole bunch of this stuff, obviously, because we're going to start our budget. So that one doesn't matter. Anyway, if you can hear me, we're going to be starting our budget. So we're getting this all spruced up and updated. But this is end of January 31st. We were at 99% of our income, and you can see our beginning fund balance was 108%. So that's, you know, a decent part of it. Property taxes were at 96%, but we're only 50 some percent of the year because people pay their taxes the first, they pay it in November. So what happens is we're at 98%, doesn't mean we're in the year at 170%. People pay early, and so it catches up. There is nothing there that is a red flag. Franchise fees are 51% of our estimated income, and that's a little low, but it runs, they pay quarterly on some of them, and we get it in July for the last third. That's just kind of how it all works, but no surprises there. As I said, I think last meeting, transit and room tax is up, and that one will end up the year more than we estimated for sure, and that people will like that. So, and then if you want to look at the categories, how that all breaks down. Cemetery, not much action out of the cemetery. That's a good thing. You run a special, nobody can. Nothing really here. I'm looking at the revenue there on any one of those. You know, it'll start to all come together. I kind of always underestimate the revenue and overestimate expenses. That keeps us financially solid, because we never know what's going to come in. His department, community development, you know, I estimated $7,500 of income for fees for services, and we're 14, so double. That's our first year we've ever done it ourselves. So I had to pick a number out of thin blue sky. And so I said, well, let's try 7,500. Because if I put 25 grand in and we took in 15, then we'd have $10,000 shortfall. So next year when I put the budget together, you'll see that's going to say 25 or 30. And he's spending it.
Not all. Of course
so,
not.
And it does correlate. You know, one thing about that, you know, the more income we have from people doing stuff, the more it costs us to take care of them. So, if you want to go to the expense side, we're at 66% on the expense side at 59%. But the real telling thing there is you'll notice everything except the transfers and debt service. The ones that really are drive us, capital outlay, we're at 38%, materials and services 37%, and personnel services at 52%, all under where we would be. And those ones all chart along pretty much monthly. The reason your debt service and your interfund transfers are so high, because we make the transfer. That's a one-time thing. So we do that in the second month, it shows 100%, and that throws your overall percentages. And you'll notice that's 1.2 million. It's over half the total money in the expenses. So when you make that transfer partial way through the year, you can't. That 66% really would be 30 or 40%. But the reality is, that's why that's that way.
Okay.
Sewer and water income are good. Sewer and water expenses are where they were supposed to be. The only one that we have a big red flag on is on the street front from capital outlay, and that we're probably going to do a supplemental budget, and that's because these projects, like out here, we've talked about, but we thought we were going to spend most of our money by June 30th, but the projects were slower. But we have to build the budget in April. They haven't even started the project, hardly. But they say they're going to be done by June 30th in our contract. So I assume we're going to spend all the money by June 30th. Well, the fact is they didn't finish it until August. And in your budget, you're... Mm-hmm. So that's why our carryover is higher, because we didn't spend the money last year. It carried over.
Right.
But then our expenses are higher, because instead of spending the money last year, we're spending it this year.
Okay.
And this all gets washed out in the wash. The old money transfers forward. There's no slush fund. There's no, it rolls forward.
Okay. Any questions, Council? Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Did you want to approve the financial statement? It was in your consent agenda.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the financial statement?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimously approved. So at this time we'll have public comment. Any public comment at this time?
Unrelated to an agenda item like marijuana, because we'll come to that.
Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to a presentation by Central Oregon Housing Authority.
Mr. Tom Kemper is Executive Director of the Housing Authority, and it's a pleasure to have him here once again. And him and I toured town a couple of years ago, and glad to see he's back to give us an update on the housing ones, and then I'll probably have a couple of questions.
Okay, great. Mr. Mayor, councilors, thank you for this opportunity to come and visit you tonight about Housing Works. And I didn't realize that everybody showed up for my presentation, but then Rick said there were other agenda items that attracted the crowd. So I wanted to take you through sort of our history. So we're the Housing Authority for Central Oregon. Organized as a public corporation under Chapter 456 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, established in 1977 by Deschutes and Jefferson County, and then Crook County joined in 2001. And then in 2006, we rebranded as Housing Works. Our structure, I have a board of commissioners with 10 commissioners. There's one vacancy currently. Three from each county, so Jefferson has three, Crook has three, and Deschutes has three. And then we have a resident commissioner who is a person who actually is served by Housing Works. And in this case, actually has a voucher under the Housing Choice Voucher Program. This is our service territory. Obviously, Deschutes has the greatest population. I wanted to give you some statistics about the seal of La Pine. This gives you a kind of a breakout of income levels. So 31% of the La Pine population is below median family income for Deschutes County. Another 27% is between 30% and 50% of area median family income, and then 24% is between 50% and 80%. So that's pretty significant. This really is kind of an astonishing statistic. This shows that 87% of renters in La Pine are rent burdened, and rent burden means that they're paying more than 30% of their income for rent.
Is that gross income?
It's gross income. Really alarming is that 46% are paying more than 50% of their income for rent. So that's really an astonishing statistic, and it really is compelling that, you know, we need to be building affordable housing in La Pine. That's pretty clear. So. In terms of the split between homeowners and renters, it's basically 50-50. And then the housing stock is like two-thirds single family, with then 17% being mobile homes, 9% being larger single family, and then 7% being 2-4 unit, you know, duplex, 2-4 plexes. Now how this compares with Deschutes County, I mean, you can see that, the Deschutes County numbers are far lower in terms of being under 30, 50, 80% of AMI. The household type is, you know, remember you were 50-50 in Deschutes County, it's two-thirds owners. And then the rent burden is very different here. I mean, so the county's at 54%, and we were, you know, La Pine was over 80%. So that's really very significant and shows a really strong need for affordable housing in La Pine.
You know, twice as many mobile homes.
Well, yeah.
You have 9%. 9% in Deschutes County?
Yes.
Mobile homes in
New York. Yeah, exactly.
We were 17.
That's right. Basically 87% of renters, or 296 households, are rent burdened in the city. And so there's a lot of work to be done in terms of building affordable housing here. So that's kind of background, some statistics on the city. So I wanted to share with you more about Housing Works for those of you who are unfamiliar with this. So our mission is fostering dignity through housing. We do that in a number of ways. We have a Housing Choice Voucher Program where we serve almost 1,200 households, and we provide like $7.5 million of rental assistance to landlords throughout the three county area. We have a real estate development wing that has seven limited liability companies that own various communities that we've developed. We have a portfolio management group that has 740 units of housing, and it's managed by a property management company that we formed 4 years ago called Epic Property Management. And then the fourth piece to that is resident services, and we serve over 2,000 people with resident services, and that includes kids programs, adult education, financial assistance through VITA programs and whatnot. I'll get into that more as we go on. So in terms of the number of vouchers that are held by folks in the city of La Pine, so we have 74 vouchers held by households in the city, serving 181 people. 68% of them are elderly or disabled. And that compares with Deschutes County. We serve over 1,000 households, 2,200 people, and 60% of those voucher holders are elderly or disabled. So obviously we have a more significant senior population or disabled in La Pine. This is sort of an interesting statistic. So this is the portion of rent that we would pay on average under a housing choice voucher, and that's the average of what the tenant would pay. And in La Pine, the average income for a person holding a voucher household is a little over $12,000, and that's pretty consistent with the rest of Deschutes County. And that means that we're paying almost $39,000 a month in rental assistance to landlords in the city. And then to kind of give you a comparison, this is Deschutes County. So these statistics are pretty close, actually. But obviously, you know, we're paying over $500,000 to landlords in throughout all of Deschutes County. So this is kind of embarrassing to me because this is our current portfolio right now, and with the exception of La Pine, we match up pretty close, you know, I mean, population-wise. So we have units to population, and what's obvious is that we don't have units in La Pine, and we readily admit that we need to get down here and get some affordable housing built, and Rick and I have talked about that, and it's just something we have to get after. In terms of the structure of our portfolio, 72% is workforce, 6% is farm worker, we have 12% is senior, 9% is special needs, and then we have a small number of tutor homes that are really, they're single family homes that we put residents in that want to learn how to become homeowners, and we have a whole program built around that. I'll talk about it in a minute. So PathWorks is our family self-sufficiency program. Basically, anyone who holds a voucher is eligible to be involved in PathWorks. And basically, we have three caseworkers who work with, currently I think we have about 125 folks in the PathWorks program. And the idea is that you provide them with the ability to, you know, to for them to become independent. I mean, that's really the goal. And so you help them repair their credit. You teach them how to become better tenants. You provide financial education. Show them how to budget. You introduce the concept of asset building, where with the VITA program, for every dollar that they save, it's matched 3-to-1. So we have folks who, for example, Donda T, so she saved $3,000 in an IDA account. It gets matched three to one. So she has a total then of $12,000, and she can use that to buy a home, start a business, or for education. So it's a pretty powerful program. We've created 120 homeowners in Central Oregon. Five of them currently are in La Pine, including Laura and Brian. Laura and Brian actually used NSP down payment assistance to help purchase their home.
I think that was the only one, or we had a hard time getting people to bite on that.
We did, yeah, which was kind of surprising.
Yeah, you know, we met with the realtors and had them in. I think that was a lack of getting the realtors to want to. It's just a combination. It's worked for them. Financing, the banks weren't used to it. They didn't like some of this.
Right.
The federal government comes up with programs, but no one knows what to do with them or likes them.
Right. So. And they can only be used, NSP money could only be used for foreclosures. So that, you know, so obviously.
We had $200,000 or $300,000. We were going to, we figured about an average of $20,000 a house, something like that for down payments. So we could have done quite a few houses, and you can see the numbers. We ended up getting money back, went to Redmond.
I know, yeah.
But, I mean, people wouldn't take it. It wasn't the needs here. It was probably just not the program that people needed here or understood.
Yeah.
Because you show the need.
Right. It takes a fair amount of sophistication to understand what that's about, you know, and it was a heck of a deal at the time. So, anyway, Donna T, so she was living in a camp trailer, and she entered the Pathworks program in 2010 with the goal of purchasing a home. And so she got part-time employment and then full-time employment. She saved $3,000. It was match $9,000, and she was able to actually buy a home. Pretty amazing story. So, and I believe that she gave up her voucher. And so the whole idea of Pathworks is that, you know, it's a hand up, not a handout, and you work with people to get them on their own 2 feet, and then they can give up their voucher, and then that enables us to you know, help another family. I mean, we just opened up our voucher program. There's over 4,000 people on our waiting list on the main one, and then there's another 600 on the non-elderly disabled. So I mean, it's just, you know, it's the demand is incredible, and there's, you know, we have just a finite amount of money in vouchers from HUD that we get to spend. So you know, for what we're trying to do in 2015 is obviously increase affordable housing supply in Central Oregon. I mean, Central Oregon is in the middle of this crazy housing crisis where literally there is no housing. It's really serious. And so we're very focused on building more units in Central Oregon. And then obviously we're going to continue to look for opportunities to buy and rehab properties, and then continue to assist low-income families through the Pathworks programs and other resident service programs that we have. So that's pretty much all I have. If there are questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I was hoping that we, how do we move forward on a project here? You know, I think that's something that you need to statistically show it. We don't have a project, so I know it takes years to put together, but hopefully the housing works and the board is gonna, you know, try to help get something.
I think the most important thing is to find a piece of land that we can sort of tie up and.
Well, tonight we're voting on a zone change right across from the schools, on land to rezone it to multifamily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so then, walk.
So then we should have a conversation about that.
Yeah, and there's willing, I think, owners, and they want to do something that's 8 or 9. It's more than they need.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, I think that would be a good spot. And I think you and I drove by it. We'll look again, but that would be a great location because it's the one place you could live, work, and walk.
Yeah, so it's because it's close to commercial and it's right
commercial,
across the street from
parks, schools.
That would be perfect. So we need to reconnect on that. So assuming you pass that tonight, then we should get after that in a very serious way. So I'll give you a call.
Okay.
Are there other questions?
I think it's enlightening. Mm-hmm. I think we all know I'm a property owner and renter, or I rent houses, and there's none to rent down here.
No, that's right.
You know, and even the people who think they're getting out of bend from all of that very tight 3% are available, they're coming down here and they're not here.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. So, and I think the same thing is true in Redmond, and I think the same thing is true in Prineville.
The Central Oregon is in the middle of this an incredible housing crisis, and we need more housing for sure.
So and multifamily's not getting built because it doesn't pencil.
It's tough. It's tough to pencil without gap money for sure. And that's you can only build what you can get financed, obviously. So.
Just as a point, so that maybe the council will know, when you read about this about the Park and Rec lowering the SDCs in Bend, that's in direct relationship to the city trying to make multi-family units or more of them get built.
Right.
That will pencil out.
Right. Exactly.
Because the biggest killer is the SDC charges that just take it away. That they can't pencil out. So that's what that you're reading about, where the Park and Rec will lower them and the city's asking them to do it. It's strictly about multifamily, trying to get up to the level of multifamily housing that they need to balance out over the coming years.
Absolutely. And hopefully I'm going to be on the committee. I mean, we've been pushing that issue hard with parks, and we're very active in that campaign to get them to exempt SDCs for multifamily that's affordable.
Yeah. Remember, we don't have a transportation SDC at this time, and we don't have a park SDC.
So we should get down there quick.
Yes.
Okay.
You don't have to come fight us for it. We don't have one.
Okay.
Calm next week.
All right. Great. Well, no, I, depending on how this goes, for sure. No, well, I'm not, because I mean,
okay,
I mean, I mean, I was astounded by the numbers when we pulled them up, that, you know, you're 87%, you know, your rental, renters here are 87% rent burden. Almost half of them pay more than half their income. I mean, that's an astonishing figure. And, you know, we've got to do something about that for sure. So, love to partner with you to make that happen. So
we appreciate the efforts and hope to see it come to fruition, and thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity to come and visit. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
You bet. We'll talk soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
No problem.
Item number 8 is an ordinance number 2015-01, an ordinance of the City of Lapine amending the comprehensive plan and zoning map to change the zone designation for certain property from public facility to commercial residential mixed use, and to change the zone map for that property from PF to CRMX. And we'll open a public hearing at this time on this issue and ask for a staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is not really a land use hearing, so we're not going to give the typical staff report that we would. What this is a matter of fact, the council will adopt this ordinance essentially ratifying what the Planning Commission has done, which is to approve this zone change and comprehensive plan amendment, as the mayor described, for that property. And it's the property's 8.4 acres, bounded by Coach Road, Huntington, and Memorial, right across from the schools. And it's in a ideal location, and there's a lot of other reasons why the Planning Commission voted to approve it. So again, this ordinance just ratifies their decision.
Okay. Any question at this point, Council? If not, then we'll go to public hearing and or public comment, excuse me. And are there any public comments in relationship to this ordinance as described? Hearing none, I will close the public hearing and we'll have some council deliberations. Karen, any?
I think it's a great idea that we change it.
I'm in favor of it.
Yeah, go along with that. Yeah, it sounds like it's already been thought of by someone else.
All right. Is there a motion to approve ordinance number 2015-01, an ordinance of the City of Lapine amending the comprehensive plan and zoning map to change the zone designation for certain property from public facility to commercial residential mixed use, and to change the zoning map for the property from PF to CRMX?
So moved. I second.
It's moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's approved unanimously.
I think you have to have a roll call for an ordinance.
That's a good point. We'll do a roll call.
Thank you.
Rick?
Rick Jones, aye.
Kathy Egan, aye.
Karen Ward, aye.
Opposed? It's unanimously by roll call. Item number 9, we get to the meat of the evening. Discussion on ordinance number 2015-02. An ordinance of the City of La Pine establishing time, place, and manner regulations concerning medical marijuana dispensaries and declaring an emergency. Staff report?
So, what we're doing tonight is, this is for the council and the audience, we're actually will hold a hearing, a public hearing, with the actual approval of the ordinance in a few weeks. So tonight we felt we'd like to get most of the public comment we can tonight. It's also then we need the, you've got a draft ordinance in front of you. If there's some changes or things you want a lot different, we need you to tell us so staff can prepare it for the hearing.
Okay.
Because at the hearing you make some changes, but you can't, you know, you might want to throw out half of it. But we cannot do that sitting there in the night of the hearing. Then, as I said, the problem is that May 1st rolls around. If you don't have an approved ordinance by May 1st, then the moratorium's off. So the default is you do something or the moratorium's off. Doing nothing means that the moratorium goes away. So you really are forced to. So what we're looking for is any direction if there's any major changes. And so this is a chance for you to hear from the public, debate amongst yourself, and really come to grips. And when we have the final hearing, you know, you should be pretty clear at kind of where you're headed. We've had many meetings on this. The Planning Commission's had hearings and meetings on it. So we've had 4 or 5 of these over the last few months.
Okay.
So that, with that, and then,
briefly describe.
Yeah. The, well, you've got the ordinance.
Right.
And did we make a copy? Do the people out in the audience have ordinance? Who does or who doesn't, you know. Okay, Ashley, would you make some copies?
I can do that.
So while she's making copies, I think it would help for all of them.
Yes.
You want to take a few minutes?
Did you want your break now?
Sure.
Okay, then we can take 5 minutes to go to the bathroom and then come back.
I do, but for 5 minutes?
Yeah.